Steps up, deep ball down the middle of the field. He's got Cruz, 35, 30, 20, 10, 5, touchdown Giants!
Romo drops straight back to throw. Steps up, gets hit by Canty.
Pass intercepted by Jason Pierre-Paul to the 10, to the 5, touchdown Giants!
There goes Wilson again, trying to break to the outside. Wilson cuts it back to his right, needs a block, and Wilson's going to go. He's to the 10, 5, touchdown Giants! 97 yards.
Now here are your hosts, Anita Marks and Paul Dottino.
What is up? What is up? What is up? It is Anita Marks, Paul Dottino, and of course, as always, you, Big Blue Nation, Giants fans, want to get on board? Big Blue Kickoff Live with you for the next hour, 201-939-4513. And because the players had off yesterday, today is kind of like a normal Wednesday for the guys. So just to break it down for you, Paul and I with you for the next hour, taking your calls. Also, Eric Kennedy, owner of Big Blue Interactive, is going to join us in about 10 minutes. We'll hear from him, get a feel for where the fans are, what they're thinking, what they're saying on a lot of the message boards. Head coach Tom Coughlin will address the media today at 11 a.m. Eastern Time. You can tune into that right here on Giants.com or watch it on the MSG Network. And then players' practice will be made available to the media later on today. We'll have those interviews for you posted on Giants.com a little bit later on this evening, so make sure you check that out before the Thursday night football game that takes place tonight. Also, no Big Blue hits today.
No, that's because all the technical stuff that's got to be done with all the other shows, we just can't turn it on.
Right. So, but still a lot going on today here at the facilities. The Giants getting ready to take on the Minnesota Vikings, and that is a Monday night football game on the big stage. One announcement to be made that we did not talk about. Well, the announcement was not made out of Minnesota when we hosted yesterday, and that is quarterback Josh Freeman, as anticipated. Listen, I said this last week. You're not paying a guy $3 million to come on board to hold a clipboard.
You said it the second he signed.
Yeah.
You knew it.
Well, $3 million. Come on. $3 million?
Yeah.
Especially in this day and age of salary caps and teams trying to compete. And on top of that, let's face it, let's disrespect Christian Ponder and Matt Castle. These guys are not starting quarterbacks in the NFL. They're backup quarterbacks. Josh Freeman gives you the best opportunity to win. He's the most athletic. He's got the strongest arm. What we talked about yesterday was the Minnesota Vikings said if they felt that he got a good grasp of the offense, keep in mind he's been there for 2 weeks now, then they would give Josh Freeman. What does that tell you about Christian Ponder and Matt Castle, that a quarterback who's only been there 2 weeks, to learn the system, Paul, is going to be starting against the New York Football Giants on Monday Night Football? It says a lot.
Yeah, it's really an indictment on both of those guys. And, you know, they took a draft pick, a flyer on Ponder, because they really thought he was going to be the answer. Castle, of course, has been now in a couple of different places and really never panned out. And now, you know, after this third strike, who knows where his career is going. But, you know, the thing about Freeman is that he's got a real gun of an arm. He can wing it downfield with a lot of velocity, and he also moves around in the pocket a lot better than either of those other two guys. So between the arm strength and the ability to move off of his spot, you know, he does pose a different dynamic for this Giants defense. You know, they're not looking at those other two statues who really don't throw the ball accurately or with much velocity. It's a different deal. But here's what I think, Anita. The one thing that can work in the Giants' favor, despite the fact that Leslie Frazier was talking yesterday about how, hey, they rushed him up, they thought that Freeman could get ready. He was really, really good in studying and getting things down. You know, that's still a lot of book stuff. That's still a lot of film stuff. You and I both know from watching practice time after time, there is that certain timing factor of getting on the field, especially in live game speed, that is different than anything you can teach in the classroom. And I know Freeman's been around the NFL for several years, but I'm going to venture to say to you, there's going to be at least three or four times, if not more, in Monday night's game where he's not going to be on the same page with his receivers. I think that's a given.
That is true.
Right?
But at that point in time,
the Giants better take advantage of it.
Well, no. At that point in time, that's when athleticism sets in. Okay.
Okay.
And the one thing about Josh Freeman that he brings to the table that the other two do not,
he can get around.
Is that he can get around. He's athletic. He's a mobile quarterback. Now, you know, he doesn't run that read option like we see, of course, Russell Wilson and RG3 and
he's
Cam
not Jesse
Newton.
Owens.
You know, he's not. You know, he doesn't run. That's not the type of offense. Although, you know, I've seen. Keep in mind. Not Pat White. Who's their other quarterback? When Ponder
Webb.
Yes. When Webb came in, there was a different style of offense that they ran. I'm curious. I'm really, really curious. We're talking to Perry Fuel today, right?
Yes, I think so.
Okay, that's one of the questions that I would like to pose to Perry Fuel is, because of the style of quarterback that Josh Freeman is, have they gone back and watched film of Webb to try to get an idea of that's why they pay me the small bucks to see if maybe
I didn't think of that
to see if maybe they got an idea of possibly some of the plays that they might throw into his package on Monday night because he's the kind of quarterback that can pull that stuff off, Paul.
That's interesting, Anita, because in addition to being a mobile guy like Webb, again, Webb has a good arm.
Mm-hmm.
So it would stand a reason that he could probably run some of those plays. Wow.
So I'm curious. I'm curious. Maybe he didn't. Maybe they're like he's. Maybe he feels like no. You know, they're going to keep it kiss. They're going to keep it simple, stupid, and that way a better opportunity, as you said, for all the players on the Minnesota Vikings team to stay on the same page. But you know, listen. If you bring in a mobile quarterback like this, an athletic quarterback like this, take as much advantage of it as possible. So I'm really curious. That I think that'd be a really good question for Perry Fuel. And this game scares me. I'm not going to lie about it. I'm more frightened now that Josh Freeman is the starting quarterback than if Matt Cassel or Christian Ponder is. Your thoughts, Paul? I mean, are you more frightened that Josh Freeman is the quarterback, or do you think that bodes well for the Giants possibly getting their first win on Monday Night Football?
Well, I think it actually works to the extreme in both ways, because clearly Freeman is a better athlete than those other guys. Clearly he can make more throws than the other guys. And quite honestly, remember a few years ago with Tampa, he was a winning quarterback. What, he won 10 games with them? Back in 2000, was it 10? I mean, he's won before in this league. He's got a little bit of a resume. So there's no question you're talking about a different level of quarterback with Josh Freeman.
Mm-hmm.
But because of the timing factor, that could work against him. And the other thing I wonder too, Anita, is there a possibility that Josh Freeman's going to be so hepped up, so jacked, Monday Night Football, his debut in Minnesota. He wants to prove these people right. Hey, they put $3 million on my table. I got to show them something. There's also the possibility Freeman may be a little bit over the top and try to do too much and force a few things. The point is, I do think the environment is there whereby he is going to have some slip-ups. And it's up to the Giants then to take advantage of them. If they don't, shame on them. And then Freeman's athleticism and talent will certainly raise the Vikings' offense level of play. So I agree with you in both ways, if that makes any sense.
Sure, sure. 201-939-4513 is the phone number, 201-939-4513. We're going to get to your calls in a hot second, as always, because it is a Thursday. Eric Kennedy, owner of Big Blue Interactive, one of the best Giants fan sites out there, joins us every Thursday to kind of get a feel of what the fans are thinking, what they're posting up on a ton of message boards. So let's bring in Eric now. Eric, welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live. How are you doing this afternoon?
Great, and you got to hold Paul to the fire there, because I saw him on the NFL Network guaranteeing a Giants win, so he can't back off on that.
you pulled a Rasheed Wallace on the NFL Network?
Kriegel backed me into a corner as a fellow New Yorker and said I had to defend New York, and so yeah, I guaranteed a win.
Oh my gosh, Paulie D!
I said the buck stops here, but you know what? You know what? Honest to God. Look, if they can't beat the Vikings this weekend, they might wind up going 0-16. I mean,
Eric, let me ask you this. In looking at the schedule, I mean, I'm assuming, in regard to the fan interaction that you're getting on your site, are they looking at the schedule? Are you getting posts about, we should be able to beat this team? Is Minnesota a game that most Giants fans feel that the Giants absolutely positively will win on Monday?
Well, I should couch all of this, and this is a very, very strange season. So the types of discussions that fans are having right now are not the normal types of discussions that we would normally see in a regular year. We would be talking about matchups and how they're going to do in the game and that type of thing. That's kind of gone out the window. Everyone is so down and so depressed right now that the types of discussions that are going on right now, I think if you saw it now, you'd be saying, you know, where what's going on with Giants fans? And you know, when they saw that Josh Freeman starting, I kind of agree with Paul. I think it could go, you know, both ways on them. But you know, the mindset is now great with our defensive ends not getting any pass rush at all. It's going to be basically a 7-on-7 drill back there for this. You know, this is a perfect game for Josh to come back, because the Giants are getting any heat on the quarterback. So to answer your question, when they look at the schedule, sure, those that are still holding out hope see this game, see the upcoming games. They also look back at, you know, what might have been had they been able to beat the Bears, had they been able to beat Kansas City because of the state of the NFC East. But I think as the losses rack up, and you know, both the Eagles and Cowboys now at 3-3, and the division records, I think most fans are resigning themselves to now to basically looking at the draft and free agency. So most of the discussions right now really are looking at what needs to be done in terms of roster, coaching staff, scouting, that type of thing.
Eric, I got to ask you about a big topic that, you know, I've been beating the drums for since March. And it finally happened. They got Brandon Jacobs in here. They unleashed the big man, and look what he did. 22 carries for 106 yards and 2 touchdowns against Chicago. And, you know, I caught a lot of heat on Twitter over the last 5 or 6 months about saying that Jacobs would be a good addition to this team. And
yeah, I thought you were his agent.
Well, you know, there are a lot of naysayers about it, but, you know, the proof's in the pudding. 22 carries.
Yes,
what more could you want from the guy? I'm curious. What has been the feedback from the Giants fans in discussing Brandon Jacobs' return to the offense last week? Because let's face it, the first 4 or 5 weeks he was here, they barely used him.
Yeah, there's been some people that have been eating crow on that, you know. And I know you've been beating the Jacobs drum all along. And as I just joked, I thought you were representing him at one point.
I knew what he could bring to the table,
people,
Eric. That's the bottom line.
I think
he could help.
Well, the thing is, you know, he was away from the game for 2 years, or basically almost 2 years, and his production had declined noticeably since 2008, so there's that concern. But I think people want to see it again, too, because they know how beat up the Bears were up front on the defensive line. But he ran tough. I mean, you can't take that away from him. He looked, you know, in a lot of ways, that's the best he's run maybe in a few years there. So we'll have to see. You know, as you know, he strained his hamstring, and he's up there. He's older now. He's 31, and we'll have to see if he can put together back-to-back games. They're going to need him, obviously, with David Wilson's injury situation. They're going to need to rely on him heavily, and hopefully he's as productive against the Minnesota Vikings as he was last week. But yeah, they took away. Where we're at right now is this: when after a game's completed, you know, there's the complaining and the moaning about what went wrong. A lot of it's on Eli Manning and the passing game. But then there will always be a discussion. Well, let's focus on some of the few things that went right in a game. And there'll always be, you know, they'll raise a number of things. And the run defense has been coming up in terms of the defensive tackle play. But obviously, the running game was a highlight this past week. They finally got the running game going, and it was nice to see, you know, toughness and you know, them scoring in the red zone twice on running the football and that type of thing. So yeah, there's been positives, but the negatives are really outweighing a lot of the positives right now in terms of the fan discussion. But I think like the team itself, a win would just make everyone feel a lot better. It's between the preseason losses and the regular season losses. It's been a long time since there's something good to feel about at the end of a football game.
Again, Eric Kennedy, owner of Big Blue Interactive, one of the best Giants fan sites out there, joining us on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Last question for you is, I'm curious to get your thoughts on what the fans are saying about David Wilson. You know, some major concerns there in regard to his neck and the spinal stenosis and whatnot. We're being told that he's going to be out for 2 weeks, right?
At least
2 weeks. But what has been the fan response in regard to the rushing attack and David Wilson?
Well, a lot of fans saw that production of the Eli, you know, the Eli and Peyton and Cooper's family, the Manning, the Book of Manning production that came out, and there was discussion on that, obviously, if Cooper Manning's had the same condition, though I guess it was much more severe and medical technology being different back then than when he had the procedure done. So there's fear among a lot of fans that, hey, this is not only season-ending, but is this a career-ending type of injury? As lay people in the medical field, a lot of Giants fans hear narrowing of the spine, and they think, "Dear God, is there something that they can do to even fix that?" And they wonder about his quality of life. Then you hear more optimistic statements by David, who's obviously is a positive type of guy. And then Coach Coughlin, at least on his last press conference, seemed to be downplaying it a little bit more. So the real fear right now is. It's not only, you know, is this a career and is this a season-ending thing? It's what does this bode for his career? Is this going to be another situation where a high draft pick, either through injury and or lack of production, is going to be a bust for the Giants? So that's the fear right now. Is he even going to be able to come back from this?
Good stuff, Eric. We appreciate your time. Always look forward to your segment on Thursday. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, hopefully we'll have something positive.
Next week. I'm with you.
All
thank
right.
you. Enjoy
Thanks.
The game, Eric.
Bye-bye.
Again, Eric Kennedy, you can find him at Big Blue Interactive. Anita Marks, Paul DiTino, and of course you for the next 45 minutes. Phone lines are open, 201-939-4513. Also, all things social media here at Giants.com. You can find us at Giants on Twitter. Make sure you include that hashtag Giants Chat for any questions or comments. We monitor Twitter throughout the show, and of course we share them with all our listeners. Let's kick it off with Stan. In UMass. Stan, welcome to Big Blue. What you got for us?
Hey, good morning. Been a Giants fan since the 50s. So I've had some ups and downs, but
yep.
There was a column by Bart Hubbock a few days ago which talked about the problems with the Giants, and one of them it talked about was the salary cap and how the salary for Eli Manning results in about a 17% of the total salary cap this year. And, you know, a salary of that nature would probably be acceptable for a quarterback that can carry the team. But it's obvious that Eli can't carry the team, and he's holding much too high a salary cap figure for the Giant team, in my estimation. And, I don't know, what are your thoughts on that? The other thing I would think about is if he had a real bad year, you know, it might behoove himself to take a cut, like Ted Williams did in his last year, to make amends, so to speak, and to help the team. What are your thoughts on that?
Stan, thanks for the call, and thanks for being such a fan for such a very long time. But, you know, again, we've talked about this all season long. I get it. Eli Manning, 15 interceptions. And I'm sure several of them are his fault, forcing the ball. We heard Tom Coughlin say, Eli's trying to put this team on his shoulders. He's trying to do too much. But you've got to look at the total picture here. This isn't just an Eli problem. This is an offensive problem. The last time the Giants had drafted an offensive lineman in the first round was 13 years prior to Justin Pugh. I think they were expecting bigger and better things from David Boss when they brought him over from San Francisco. You know, when this offensive line lost Sean and Richie. Mm-hmm.
They lost a lot of fight. Fight, blue-collar work ethic, production. They lost a lot.
So, you know, I'm not going to sit here and just put this all on the shoulders of Eli Manning. If the caller is suggesting that the offense take a pay cut based on the fact that they're not producing like we're normally used to seeing them produce, then that should be a pay cut across the board. It's not just Eli's fault. That's what I'm saying.
Eli's making $13 million this year. He's got 14 and 15 left on his deal, so two more seasons after this. The Giants have 29 free agents going into the offseason as of now. And there's an estimate based on, you know, a lot of things are going to happen. I mean, Chris Snee, there's certainly a chance that he'll retire and he'll come off the books. But as of right now, you're looking at the Giants probably having about $14 million under the cap going into next season. Now, is it possible that maybe Eli gets readjusted? Yeah, I'd say so. If I would do that, I would give an extension, quite frankly. See, one of the things the caller mentioned that was funny, he was talking about Ted Williams. I think when Ted Williams took that pay cut that he was referring to, not that it's really relevant, but I think he was near the end of his career. Eli Manning right now is in his prime. I think you would agree, Anita. He's still smacking in those prime years for an NFL quarterback. He's got some very, very, very good years to go before you start talking about a guy who may be on the decline, so to speak. And then at that point, if you want to start talking about maybe a guy who should give some money back, that's fine. I don't think Eli's anywhere near that to this stage of his career. But that's my feeling.
I'm with you.
You know?
I'm with you. 201-939-4513. Let's go to Hugo calling in from New Jersey. Hugo, welcome.
Good morning, guys, and thanks for taking my call. You know, in most NFL seasons, I tend to be in agreement with Len from Columbia, Maryland, that the answers are on the 53-man roster. But I think what's striking is that over the last couple of weeks, maybe the best guys playing on the field were Will Hill, Beeson, Jacobs, and Connor, which were either on the scrap heap or not on the 53-man roster at the beginning of the year. So I think that's quite an indictment of that 53-man roster. Anyhow, you guys talked about the running game earlier and David Wilson as well. You know, I would temper my enthusiasm for the running game and return of balance, although, you know, Jacobs ran hard and Connor certainly did a good job in Chicago. But Chicago is, you know, decimated along the defensive line. So,
well, Minnesota's
really
rushing defense is not very good either. So, there's the potential there for the Giants to have another good night running the football.
Okay. But, I think that's going to be the exception and not the norm as we move through the rest of the year. So you just got to be very careful, right, that you don't get back into those situations of third and long. If you try it, you're not successful, you know, time to go to something else. I don't know what that something else is. I mean, we talked earlier in the season about adjustments. It's clear to me that these adjustments are just very hard to come by. You can't recreate OTAs in the whole off season while you're in season. Someone said over the weekend when I was watching another game, to be a good screen team, you got to practice it incessantly. And it's pretty clear to me that the timing and the practice time just haven't been spent on that type of passing offense. Now, with respect to David Wilson, you know, I'm a little indifferent about David Wilson. Quite frankly, as a general matter, I don't like taking running backs in the first round of the draft, and I especially don't like taking this type of running back. I mean, I don't think he's a full-time running back. In fact, I don't even think he's a football player. I think he's an athlete that they're trying to make into a football player. And, you know, one time you could say the Megatt types or the, you know, Eric Metcalf types, they were more valuable in the era where you had the kick return. Now they're actually trying to legislate the kick return. So the value of a player like David Wilson is really diminishing in the NFL these days, and especially in the Giants offense where we really don't throw to the running backs. I mean, I watched so many games over the weekends, and the throws to the running backs were a real weapon. And we just don't practice it. We just don't have that diversity in the offense. For whatever reason, the Giants just don't do it and don't do it well. So that's my concern. I do have one question for you guys. When the Giants go to the so-called four receiver set, this drives me really mad. You know, they used to split out Travis Beckham. Now they split out, you know, Brandon Myers. What are they trying to achieve with that? Why not just put another receiver on there, have another person with speed who can pressure the defense and maybe take a short pass and create something with it? Because, quite frankly, I don't even remember Travis Beckham ever catching an intermediate pass. The only pass he ever caught was that long pass against Green Bay. What are they trying to achieve there?
Well, the hope is that when they put Myers in there, and I know it's an obvious passing formation, but the hope is that if Eli has to decide to opt out and go to a run, which he has done on occasion out of the spread, that, and this is a not necessarily a very strong concept, but the hope is that Myers will actually decide to block down on the play, and that if Eli does have to go to a run, that's the direction they're going to want to go to, and he's going to provide some type of resistance against the defense so that the Giants are going to be able to make a positive play out of it.
But either Beckham nor Myers can block.
And that's part of the problem. So I understand you say, look, if he can't block, why bother? You know, just put Murphy in there and run downfield. You know what? I get it. I can't give you I can tell you why they're doing it, but in light of the fact that it doesn't seem to be happening or working very well, I can't tell you why they're not going to change it. Okay? That's about the best I can do. I'm sorry.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Michael. Have a good day.
Thank you. Hey, Anita, there's one thing he was talking about in terms of
the Giants not dumping down a lot to the short stuff, to the running backs. And actually, it also plays into a question I get a lot about, why don't the Giants run more screen passes? Well, you and I both know they like to go downfield. That's just who they are. And, you know, it's hard for them to change that because it's just in their blood. But the other thing is, in terms of the screen pass, and I don't know if a lot of people truly get this, you and I also know that a screen pass takes a lot of dominoes to be aligned, especially the offensive line, which, as we've said, has not been stellar the last several years. And when you do not have the most athletic of offensive lines, you can't even think about running a whole lot of screen passes because chances are they're not getting out there to set up that wall or to set up that gate and to help that screen pass work. And, you know, folks, understand that there are limitations to the type of offensive line the Giants have been operating with for the last several years. And one of them, not that the Giants would love to use a lot of screen passes, but one of them is that they probably could not execute that play very well. Would you not agree?
You know, because the offensive line is really having a tough year this year, yeah. I mean, you know, there's a lot of timing that goes into running a screenplay. And also, you know, you got to look at an offensive line as one cohesive unit, as one player. And because there's so many moving parts now we're talking about David Boss. I mean, I'm excited to see, you know, him. All expectations that he's going to practice today, and he'll play Monday night against the Minnesota Vikings. There's been so many moving parts that the screenplay is as Hugo, our caller, just said, and he hit the nail on the head. That's something that you have to practice time and time and time again. There's timing that goes into that, and if you're offensive line, the five guys on that offensive line are shuffling around and there's no cohesiveness and there's no consistency, it's hard to operate that and have success with the screen when you're in that situation.
You and I both know that if you don't have a stellar offensive line, it affects so much.
Well, I mean, that's where the phrase, it's one in the trenches.
Exactly.
And that represents both sides of the football, not
no
just
doubt.
One.
No doubt.
201-939-4513. Let's go to Les calling in from Florida, my stomping ground. How you doing, Les?
Hey, I'm doing good. Yeah, I just wanted to say that, you know, I kind of saw this coming. I want to put a lot of this blame on Jerry Reese, if I can, because I think the man does not address the defense at all. You know, finally got John Beeson, which is good, but the linebacking core and the secondary has been one of the worst in the NFL for years. And we still don't have a number one corner that could defend number one wide receiver.
Oh, no, no. Hold on. I got to stop you there. Now, you could talk all about the linebackers from here to eternity, but the secondary, Prince Amukamara, you don't think he's playing?
Prince Amukamara is the only
high level?
Listen, Prince Amukamara is the only cornerback I would keep on the roster. And he's good against slot
guys.
You
don't think Terrell Thomas is good?
You don't think
Antoine Roll was a good signing a few years ago?
Antoine Roll, I'm not talking about the safeties. I'm talking about more of the corners. We still don't have a number one corner. You know, Corey Webster is our number one guy. He was the second worst corner in the NFL last year. Terrell Thomas is okay, but compared to NFL, the top 10, 15 corners in the league, he's not measuring up. You need a better defense.
Wow.
You know, so I can't put it all on Eli Manning and the offense. I think we still have one of the most explosive offenses in the NFL. But in free agency, we haven't picked anybody up, and that baffles me every year. Why don't we pick anybody up in free agency? So, you know, that's pretty much my comment. I put this more on Jerry Reese than anybody else.
Well, you know, Anita, I have mixed reactions to the caller. I do think that he's really downplaying the secondary, which has played, I think, admirably well, considering there's no pass rush. You know, you're going to give a quarterback 6 seconds to throw the ball every play. How much are you expecting from that secondary? I think they've done a good job. But in terms of criticizing the personnel department, there's certainly a lot of criticism to go around there. That I'm not going to defend. But if you're going to attack the secondary, I got to stop you.
201-939-4513. Let's go to Steve calling in from D.C. Steve, welcome.
Hey, what's up, guys? Thanks for taking my call.
Hi.
listen, I just kind of wanted to weigh in on the David Wilson conversation, if I could. I was listening to one caller saying that, you know, he kind of feels like David Wilson is more of an athlete than a player. And unfortunately, I think I may have to agree with that notion, to be honest with you. I'm really not that fond of us taking him in the first round. But with that said, I certainly wouldn't want to get rid of the guy. I think he certainly can be a great contributor. I just don't think, again, that we're using him the most effective way we can. But without beating that dead horse, guys, I was going to go on the rumor thing. One thing I heard that David Wilson and Ruben Randle have been kind of, I don't know if they're playing around, but kind of joking each other on Twitter about fumbles and drop passes, and I just wanted to know what you thought, if you heard anything about that, and what your opinion is of it, and what do you think Tom Coughlin's opinion is going to be when he catches wind of it.
Well, from what I understand, they were going back and forth. It was a joke. They're very good friends. Keep in mind, they were drafted together, and since then, from what I understand, they've deleted whatever was posted on Twitter because people were getting the wrong kind of message that was being sent. So. There's really nothing to it.
Okay, well, you know, we know as Giants fans, we take that kind of talk seriously. We can make sure they're taking it seriously. So, guys, with that said, should we expect to see Peyton Hillis this week, or is he not ready?
Well, I don't think you're going to see him on the field. I think what's going to happen is he'll dress as the healthy third running back who gets a uniform, and if Jacobs can't make it because of the hammy, and has to come out at some point during the game. And, you know, Michael Cox, again, very limited in terms of what they're going to give him. That's probably the only way you're going to see Hillis. Look, Brandon Jacobs told me yesterday he's going to carry the load. He's ready for 25 carries if they want to give it to him. So that's what he intends to do. Whether or not his body holds up is another question. But that's what he's intending on. And so, no, I would think Hillis is probably not going to play. The other thing the Giants could do, and we discussed this yesterday, they could give John Connor a couple of carries in some short yardage opportunities. Why not? You know, he's been here for a few weeks. He's healthy.
Absolutely.
He's strong. You know, I would think that might be a better option than even bringing, you know, Hillis in after signing here only a few days earlier, right?
That was my opinion from the very start. I think we needed to bring another running back in at this point. You know, hopefully we can keep Cox healthy, and, you know, with Bradshaw and Bowtown Brown is back, we should, you know, have at least three running backs, you know, and a fullback. So, hey, I still think there's some hope. I'm looking excited to see what we can do with our run block, this defense. I think if we continue to have some balance, I think we'll have success, guys. Hey, great show as always. Thanks for taking my call, and I'll be listening off air.
Thank you. Let's talk about the backfield. We've heard Brandon Jacobs. He spoke to the media earlier this week. You spoke to him as well, and he said that he's going to carry the load. But keep in mind, Paul, there is a concern. He does have a tweaked hamstring. So,
yep.
You know, granted, yes, his mind's in it, his heart's in it. Hopefully his body's in it, and he doesn't injure that hamstring even further.
No doubt.
Hypothetically speaking, he does. What's plan B for the Giants? In the course of the game, what do you anticipate happening?
You know, I don't know exactly how much of the playbook they trust Michael Cox with. I don't think it's very much, but I would think he would get some reps back there, and I would think that John Connor, to me, would be the next best option. I can't see throwing Peyton Hillis into the backfield after being there for only, 4 days? I mean, here's the one thing that I did hear, is that because he was with Tampa Bay and did work with Mike Sullivan a little bit, you know, the former Giants assistant coach who was the offensive coordinator with the Buccaneers, he has somewhat of a clue as to, like, some of the philosophies and some of the core things that the Giants want to do.
How long was he with Tampa Bay?
Oh, I want to say he was with Tampa for 2 years. He's been in the league for 6. I want to say he was with Tampa for 2. So, you know, he's got a clue as to, you know, something about what the Giants offense is about, but I don't know that he's got enough to really get back there and run a few series. I mean, that, to me, that's asking a lot. You know the playbook here. It's rough.
Yeah. But, I mean, the fact, if you're telling me that, he has some experience in regard to running with Sully down there in Tampa, then that's a positive.
It's a positive. It gives him a little bit more of a chance than somebody who just came off the street and hasn't had any experience with anything relating to the Giants system. Let's put it that way. How much of a positive, I just don't know. You know, that's one of the reasons why when the Giants were in need of a running back a couple of weeks ago, they brought Darrell Scott back. Because they said, look, at least he knows the playbook. I mean, there is a comfort zone there that you like to have. And so, I don't know. I would not expect much out of Peyton Hillis is all I'm saying. Really, that's the bottom line.
So if something does happen with Brandon Jacobs, then you're looking at a heavy dose of Michael Cox.
And I think, I don't know about a heavy dose. I think a splitting it between him and Connor, maybe. I would feel more comfortable probably using John Connor, to be honest with you. Even though he hasn't carried the ball much the last several years, I would feel more comfortable giving the ball to him. I don't know. How do you feel?
I'm just going to pray to God that nothing happens to Brandon Jacobs.
That's a good thing to do.
And hoping that I know we talked about this yesterday in regard to Andre Brown. I wish Andre Brown was available and could come back sooner than later. So, mm-hmm.
Well, you know, he'll be back for the Oakland game on November 10th. But until then, they got themselves a little bit of an issue. And in fact, let's see here. I'm looking. No, Peyton Hillis was in Tampa's camp for a little while. He did not actually play any snaps with them. So that's my mistake. Last year he took 85 carries with Kansas City. And I know he was in the camp with Tampa and Sully. But that's all. Again, the value of whatever that is not much. But it's probably something. So...
201-939-4513 is the phone number. 201-939-4513. Let's go to Twitter. There's actually a few Twitter questions up here in comments. Again, hashtag Giants Chat if you have any questions or comments. This one, Terrell Thomas is a joke. Webster is a joke. Please, Paul, are you watching the games? Your thoughts on Terrell Thomas. Webster actually hasn't been playing, so I'm not sure if this gentleman's been watching the games. But talk about Terrell Thomas in a season. Your eyes are as big as grapefruits.
Wait a minute. Terrell Thomas? Is that really what he typed?
Yeah, Terrell Thomas is a joke, exclamation.
Wow.
Yeah, so...
I don't understand what's going on with that reader or that fan, because Terrell Thomas has done a masterful job not only playing the slot for the Giants the first several weeks, but then he went wide. And now they've actually had him playing outside. And Brandon Marshall pushed off on him in the end zone the other day. You saw that. Everybody saw that. I don't know what more you could ask from the guy. I really don't. And I might add, he's a really good tackler. Excellent technique. You rarely see Terrell Thomas miss a tackle. I don't think we need to move on. That's not a good comment.
201-939-4513. Here's one from Mike Farmer. We consistently say that the playbook is too much for young players for years. Time to simplify or draft smarter guys. Got to change that.
You know, that's a valid remark because, you know, the Giants will tell you, well, this is the playbook that's won us a lot of games. This is the playbook that's won us a couple of rings. And they're going to fight to change it. But at the same time, you and I both know, Anita, when you have a different group of players each and every year, you got to tweak some things. And if they don't have guys who necessarily are fitting everything that they need to do, they got to tweak it a little bit. And sometimes the Giants are a little slow to do that, I believe. I think that's probably a fair comment.
And let me just say that they do draft really intelligent guys, you know, for the most part.
Yeah.
It is a very intricate system, and it's tough to learn.
I mean, bottom line is, you know, you got to produce one way or the other. And if it's making a play the way it's drawn up, we're just making a play. How about that? You see, that's something the Giants haven't done very much of at all this year, Anita. Forget about what's being drawn up. They don't have a lot of guys just making plays. And quite honestly, you think LT, you know, played every play by the book. He went out there and he just made plays sometimes. You know, your better players, the guys who are getting paid the big bucks, the guys who have to lead the team to victory, sometimes they just have to go out and make play. So it's not always the play that's drawn up that gets it done. So, you know, all right, enough said.
This is from NFL NYG 43. How hard is it to run left or right? Is the Gilbride system for running too complicated? Paul?
I'm going to answer that with a very interesting story. Joe Morris taught me this many years ago back in the 80s. And what he said to me was, no matter how many times we drew up a play, and there was a particular running play that they'd love to run off a right tackle behind Carl Nelson, who has done some work with us on the broadcast team the last few years. And they were very successful at it. Joe told me, he said, you know what people don't get? That the whole chemistry thing about the running game is the offensive line got to be on the same page with the running back, and the running back's got to be on the same page with the line. He said, what a lot of people don't understand is that sometimes the running back not only has to read the hole, but he also needs to know exactly what that offensive lineman is capable of doing. Joe told me there were many times they would call this particular running play that was supposed to go a certain way, but he knew that Carl was not very good at turning his body that way and turning the defender the way the play was designed. So whenever they would call this specific play, Joe would purposely hesitate to the hole and then cut in the other direction, realizing that Carl would not be able to block it the way it was designed. And Joe said, you'll be surprised how many times I succeeded because I knew where Carl was going to try to take the guy, where he would take the guy, and then where I could go. There's a lot of chemistry here that has to go on, and a lot of intelligence by the running back, who has to be able to think in a millisecond as to if he's going to hit that hole, not hit that hole, where's my block going to be, where is the defender going to react to, where am I going to find room, where do I need to accelerate. It's a pretty complicated thing. It's not just run left, run right.
Again, 201-939-4513 is the phone number to get in. Big Blue Kickoff Live with you for the next 15 minutes. Myself and Paul Dottino talking all things Giants, getting ready for their Monday night football game against the Minnesota Vikings. This on Twitter, again, any questions or comments on Twitter? We're following Twitter as we host the show. You could include that hashtag Giants chat so we know exactly what you're referring to. Paul, it's not you. Somebody on Twitter. This is Mr. October 24th, says that you've got to be out of your mind if you think Eli should get benched. Hashtag Giants chat. I'm going to pose this question to you. Hypothetically speaking, Eli has another game where he throws three interceptions. Do you think Eli gets benched at any point in time?
I don't. And Tom Coughlin answered that question to the Vikings conference call folks out in Minnesota yesterday. When he's like, are you sure? Did I hear that question right? Absolutely not. And that's coach's mentality, and so that's the only way I can answer that question. It's certainly not going to happen. And quite honestly, let's hypothetically just say, for argument's sake, that coach would consider pulling Eli Manning. Would you put Curtis Painter in the game? I mean, to be fair, you're talking about a drop-off that's like Grand Canyon-like. So that's just not going to work.
201-939-4513. Let's go to Al in New Jersey. Al, welcome to the show.
Oh, nice to be here. I had a question. I keep seeing the list of those who were playing and others who were not for the week. I always wondered about this Adrian Robinson. It seems that this foot injury of what, I don't know how severe, but seems to prevent him, I mean, from really demonstrating that he's the the JPP of tight ends, as he was hyped to be.
Well, you're right, and that's the problem. He can't get on the field and stay on the field. Now, he started practicing a little bit more the last couple of weeks, and so Tom Coughlin says he's getting closer, but, you know, when he's going to get on the field is anybody's guess. And it's a shame because I think, Anita, you and I both commented during the summer, he caught the ball pretty well in practice. But we haven't been able to see anything in the games.
Yeah. Any other questions?
No, I mean, it seems that they're having this problem at tight end, and, you know, these two guys, him and Larry Donnell, seem to be, you know, physically up to the challenge, but right now performance, or at least the accessibility on the, you know, to the team on the field has been a problem.
Well, look, the bottom line is the Giants are weak at the tight end position. Let's make something very clear. Brandon Myers is a pass catcher. He's less of a blocker than even they imagined. And the other tight ends, quite honestly, they've gotten all the juice out of Bear Pascoe that they're going to get. There's no upside to him anymore.
Also, you know, and thanks for the call, Al. Appreciate it. 201-939-4513. You know, we've got to keep in mind, the offense is keeping the tight ends home because the offensive line needs as much help as possible. So we are critiquing the tight ends, and rightfully so, because this is a pass-happy NFL right now. But we're critiquing the tight ends based on their production, catches, yards, touchdowns. But on the opposite side, unfortunately, the tight ends that are on this ball club aren't great blocking tight ends. So they really weren't brought in to do that. The idea and the philosophy was that the offensive line would be able to hold its own. Possibly, you know, create a jumbo package with a sixth offensive lineman when needed, but not necessarily tap into the tight end pool to help with pass protection. And that's what's happened here. So we're not seeing a lot of productivity.
And therefore, the Giants need to address the tight end position during the offseason, quite frankly. They're going to need to upgrade that position. I mean, there's no way they can stand pat with the guys that they have, I don't think. Just one of many things that have to be fixed on this team.
Let's talk about the NFC East for a second here, Paul. As we know, Dallas and the Philadelphia Eagles both at 3-3, and they're playing against one another this week 7. Pretty interesting situation that's developing with the Philadelphia Eagles, and the fact that Nick Foles, a lot of folks feel, Sal Palantonio, do you ever watch his hits on ESPN?
Yeah.
He is in love with Nick Foles.
Yeah.
He has a man crush on Nick Foles.
I think he does.
He is lobbying, literally lobbying in the lobby of the Philadelphia Eagles facility for Nick Foles to remain the starting quarterback. It's ridiculous. But everything that I'm hearing out of there is that the players in the locker room, guys like DeSean Jackson and LeSean McCoy, feel that Michael Vick is their leader. He is their quarterback. He is their leader. He is the starter. Nick Foles is only in because Michael Vick's hamstring is tweaked. But there's some talk that the coaching staff feels that Nick Foles is the better quarterback, and even if Michael Vick is healthy, that Foles will remain the starting quarterback. But don't you think if that happens, and you know you have a locker room full of guys that really admire and look up to Michael Vick as their team leader, that Chip Kelly could be risking losing that locker room 1 year, just coming in, making the switch from college to the pros. As a head coach, how do you handle that situation? Do you go with the quarterback that you feel gives you the best opportunity to win? His quarterback rating was a 133 last week when he played.
Yeah.
He hasn't turned the ball over. He passed for almost 300 yards and 3 touchdowns. And he's getting a lot of other guys in the mix, like Riley Cooper, like Brent Celek. But you've got concerns because you know Vic has that locker room. What do you do as a head coach, Paul?
Well, you know, I'll be honest with you. I was surprised at how well Foles has played the last game and a half. You know, if you really, you know, want my first impression, it's that, you know, I'm surprised at his production. But given what he's done, it's kind of hard to pull him out right now, isn't it? I'd be inclined to let him play one more week and see if he plays himself back out of the spot. I don't think I'd make the change to Vic this week. I would give Foles another week. And you know what? What's so bad about giving, if you're Michael Vick is your guy, what's so bad about giving him one more additional week to rest up and get better? What's so terrible about that? And if Foles does well, fine. Then you deal with this again next week. If Foles falls on his face, then you don't have to worry about the question because it answers itself. How's that for a cop-out answer?
201-939-4513.
You didn't tell me what you would do.
What would I do?
Would you start Foles this week or not?
Well, I think you have to start Foles this week because Vic is still not 100%. He's not healthy. But once Michael Vick does get healthy, that's as a head coach, and you've got all the guys in the locker room saying, Vic is our guy, Vic is our leader, and there's the possibility of losing that locker room, that's tough. I think Chip Kelly is in a very tough situation right now.
Let's say, for argument's sake, and we're playing hypothetical here anyway, that Foles is allowed to play the next two games because Vic isn't quite right. And if Foles keeps doing what he's doing, maybe that locker room won't be so much in support of Vic after all, if they see that Foles is playing such clean football and getting them some W's. Maybe then the stress on Coach Kelly is less because he could leave Foles in. That could happen. It's not out of the question, you know. You and I both know. What do players like more than anything else in the locker room? Wins. Not necessarily about who they like. It's about wins. Guy wins for you, suddenly you kind of like him a little bit.
But there's a different dynamic when it comes to Michael Vick.
I hear that.
I mean, Nnamdi Asamoah came out and specifically said that the reason he picked the Philadelphia Eagles over the Dallas Cowboys was because he wanted to play with Michael Vick. He's not even an offensive player, Paul. He's a defensive player.
I hear what you're saying.
So, Michael Vick, for whatever reason, there's something that he has with the guys in the league that, of course, remove all the off-field stuff that went on. And I know it's hard to do. I own three dogs. But there's just something about him. And the players love him, and the players love playing for him, and they love his leadership. So, on the opposite side, you've got, of course, the Dallas Cowboys. Tony Romo dealing with some issues of his own in regard to really winning when the game is on the line. Also, DeMarco Murray is out with a knee situation. Knee, right?
That is true.
Knee?
Yeah. Yeah.
So now Joseph Randle will be the starting running back for them. You know what you get with Dez Bryant. And Terrence Williams has been a real pleasant surprise for them because it seems like Miles Austin is just past his prime right now. He's just not performing. Terrence Williams has really stepped up in a big way. They have Jason Witten. Thoughts on this game? Who do you think wins this matchup this week?
I had a real hard time picking this one when I was asked for FAN this week to decide who I was going to go with. I wound up, I believe, finally going with Dallas, believe it or not. And it was a hard one to do. Ultimately, Anita, here's the sad part, is that you and I just sat here and talked about two of the other three teams in the division, two teams that are leading the division. And I don't know how you feel, but I know I'm not very impressed. This division's terrible. And that really is what makes the Giants 0-6 start so painful, because this division is there for the taking. There is no bona fide, really good division champion sitting in the NFC East. And especially with the injuries that they're talking about, as you mentioned, I don't know. I am picking Dallas to beat Philadelphia, but it's not a very strong pick. I don't have a lot of conviction on it.
And thoughts on what's going on with the Washington Redskins? I had a conversation with somebody the other day. As much as, and you know, I'm a big RG3 fan. I'm not a Washington Redskins fan. I'm a fan of players. And I really like this young man's style of play. I feel really horrible, the knee issues that he suffered last year, because the sad part about this all, Paul, is that I feel that we will never see the vintage RG3 again, unfortunately.
Never.
I just don't. I don't.
Never.
I don't.
That's.
I don't.
Strong.
I mean, I hate to use the word reckless, the phrase reckless abandonment, but that's kind of what he played with last year that made him so exciting and so intriguing to watch. And I just, in what have you watched? Have you seen him play so far
this
season?
Yes, I have seen some Redskins games. Yes.
So, In watching him play,
he's not right.
He's very apprehensive. He sees the open hole. He wants to run forward. It looks like he takes two steps and then he turns around and continues to scramble in the backfield, trying to create to get the pass off. He's just he's thinking too much and he's too worried. That's the sense that I get when I'm watching him play. As hard as this is for me to say, I'm curious. Do you think Kirk Cousins could do better?
Wow. In his cameo last year, he did what he had to do to get them into the playoffs. I'm not a big Kirk Cousins guy, but I do know people who are. And so I guess my answer is I don't know. to be honest with you. I don't. Here's what I will say, though. Alfred Morris, I know you and I have different degrees of how much we think about him. I happen to like him a lot as a running back, and he's going to help out any quarterback, whoever's back there, because he can run the football.
Okay, time out. I do like Alfred Morris. I'm not negative on Alfred
Morris.
Not
as much as I do. I think we were different on that degree.
No, that's not true.
It's not.
I like Alfred Morris. But, Paul, when you have a scrambling quarterback, when you have a quarterback that defenses have to either shadow and take into consideration because they could take off at any given time, it opens things up for a running back.
No doubt.
It makes life so much easier for running backs in the NFL. And now, what are you seeing? Have you seen Alfred Morris's numbers? They're nowhere close to where they were last year. And
1,000% correct.
And what is that reason? That reason is because we're not getting the same RG3, and defenses are not having to play RG3 the same way that they played him last year.
This is all true.
So now Alfred Morris's numbers are not what they were last season.
This is all true.
So it's not that I'm a fan of Alfred Morris. You have to take into consideration all elements when a player does well. It's kind of like a quarterback in Eli Manning. You have to take into consideration that Eli's playing behind one of the worst offensive lines in the NFL.
Right.
And he's not the most athletic guy on the field. So it's hard for Eli to create for himself.
You know, Anita, it's one of the reasons I love the NFL so much, because it is a team game, and there is so much involved in every play and every snap and every series and every roster. There are people who love chess and swear by chess because every second of the day that they're sitting at the table, they're thinking about the next move and the five moves ahead of that are coming up. That's what I love about the NFL. We could sit here literally for hours upon hours and hours and talk about all the different angles about why a player is better than this player, or why he's not doing as well as he should have, or how this player is affected by this, and that. It's so cool. I love the game. And I'm glad we get to do this show every morning.
Last topic I want to hit on with you, and that is what's going on with Rob Gronkowski and the Patriots. The Patriots come here to New York City to take on the Jets this coming week. And Danny Amendola did not practice yesterday. He's dealing with concussion issues. You've got, of course, the two rookie wide receivers with Tom Brady, and that's Dobson and Tompkins. But last week was supposed to be the week that Gronk was supposed to come back.
Right.
Now they're looking at this week, but reports are that his forearm is a lot worse than what most people realize. He's got an abscess in the bone. And Dr. Andrews, who's his own personal doctor, not the team's doctor, has not cleared him to play. So there's some question marks whether or not he's going to be able to play this coming week.
Well, you know, when you mentioned that to me, I guess it was yesterday, right, about the abscess in the bone, I was like, wow. So I looked it up on the internet and found out that is nasty. I mean, that's really, really nasty. What I'm surprised about is that he's even thinking about coming back right now, because that sucker's going to snap. He takes a hit. How is that thing going to stay together?
Yeah. It's a pretty crazy situation.
So, you know, and honestly, how could anybody in that locker room blame him if he retired? Really? How? And I know there seems to be a little bit of animosity going on now between...
There's some dissension going on.
But, you know, there's one thing I will say, Anita, about players, and we often say this in the media, but how many of us really believe it? I know you've had a lot of injuries in your time, so you can believe it. But until you've walked in those shoes, and until you've suffered those injuries, until you've gone through those surgeries, until you've gone through those rehabs, and until you are limited physically by some of those things that have happened to you, can you really put yourself in that person's shoes?
No. We thank you all for tuning in today. Big Blue Kickoff Live, Anita Marks, Paul Dottino. John Schmoke and Lance Meadow will be with you tomorrow, 9:30 a.m. Again, head coach Tom Coughlin does address the media later on this afternoon, about 30 minutes, actually. You can tune into that right here on Giants.com or, of course, the MSG Network. And players will be made available after practice today. And you can also tune into Giants.com for all they have to say.
So, great show today.
Yeah. Have a great day, everybody.